Street Sheldon, Bell Street, Cartier, Diller, and I'm Councilman Smiley, co-chairing the meeting. What is your pleasure on the minutes of the October 4th, 2016 meeting? And Councilman Tackett is here.
So moved.
Motion approved, there's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are deemed approved. Okay, first on the agenda is R16-187, authorize the execution for one purchase order with Document Technology Systems for an upgrade to the Recorder of Deeds software for the Office of Technology in the amount of $100,000. And in short, it is what the title says. The new version of software will position the Recorder of Deeds office to remain current with technology into the next decade. Well, he's planning on sticking around. Many functional enhancements are included, which will further streamline the office workflow and improve the customer service experience when searching records online. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. We're R16-188, authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract. Oh, Chair wants to recognize the presence of Councilman Holland. Authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract with Document Technology Systems for annual standard maintenance for Recorder of Deeds software for the Office of Technology in the amount of 53. Pardon? Oh. Technology in the amount of $53,000. As says, this is for the maintenance of the software. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. R16-190, authorizing the county executive to execute a sales agreement and other documents necessary to purchase approximately 4.79 acres of property located in Middletown, Delaware, at 2424 North DuPont Highway, tax parcel number 13013-00155, to be used as a site for the new paramedic station and other related community purposes. Councilman Bell and Councilman Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just give a brief summary of where we've been and where we are today. As we all know, our intent for a few years now has been to build a southern Newcastle County paramedic station, one that can be well thought out, well planned, and centralized in an area to serve the residents of southern Newcastle County. And not just southern Newcastle County, but our paramedic service provides protection throughout the county. And, you know, the paramedic units themselves are mobile. They relocate to locations, and they also respond when other units are committed, both north and south of the canal.
So with that being said, on the record, thank you very much.
With that being said, the southern paramedic station is now located at Southern Patrol, and units have had to literally sit outside and try to properly heat them with drugs on board and everything, and just hasn't been conducive to the operation of our paramedic operation. And so we've kind of bounced back and forth with this. At one point, we actually had an offer to put a new paramedic station on the rear side, the back side of the new Christiana emergency room site in Middletown. And that was prior administration. And that particular site, what we had was we developed through the Director of Public Safety and Chief Tan, and others in our Emergency Medical Services Division, developed a committee of paramedics and staff in command under the guidance of, like I say, Joe and Larry, to try not to make the mistakes we've made before. And mistakes that we made before, like combining a paramedic station with a library, Kirkwood Highway, it all seemed good intent, saved dollars, but we also learned that it really didn't serve the full needs of the paramedics and their vehicles. So much to the degree that the paramedic units were right up against the doors of the paramedic site out on Kirkwood Highway. You can't even lift the hood to check the oil without opening the door in the winter months. No apron to take and be able to service or wash the vehicle. There's very little space in between the vehicles. So the intent of having this committee, and I'm going to kind of come full circle here and bring us to where we are today, and try to do it in a brief manner, but thorough manner. The committee took a look at the existing paramedic stations, And so we focused in on the hospital site, and we met with representatives in committee from the hospital, and they were very restrictive as to what we were going to be able to build on that site. It would be on the rear of the property and border the tree line in the rear of the property. Where the station was going to go, it had drainage issues. We were restricted as to what type of a roof we'd be able to put on the building. We were restricted as far as signage to acknowledge that this is Newcastle County Paramedic Station 5. We were restricted from the standpoint of the apron in the front, and once again, not being conducive with being able to stock, maintain, and station paramedic units and support units at that facility. And so we met, we talked, become very complicated, and we went through a series of meetings with them, and we weren't even going to be able to put sufficient staff parking for the staff that was assigned to the paramedic station directly in front of the paramedic station. It was going to have to be in a remote parking lot area. So we really weren't able to do kind of like what we were looking to the future and good sound reasoning of being able to build a paramedic station that that served the needs. So the long and short of it is that Councilman Powers and myself attended the dedication of the ER along with other public and emergency service personnel, and we were told there that it was basically off the books because the contractor that built the ER and everything had already left the site. So we then moved on to our old emergency medical station, which housed paramedics and EMTs in Odessa. We ran through a series of problems with special services, with the town of special services having to deal with the town of Odessa. We were not able to secure water service to that facility, and it became a town fight against the fire department and against us on how we were going to bring water service from Artesian to that site. Then it got into the town itself opposing the paramedic station being there. Both lighting, the footprint of the building on that particular property, and so we started to look elsewhere, and we even went to the American Legion, who housed that building on a temporary basis, and left, and they left and did not want to be housed there because of some of the frustrations that they were facing with the town. So we approached the American Legion. We said, look, you know, you have a property up on DuPont Highway there before you get to Boyd's Corner. Would it be in your interest if we kind of did a property swap and, you know, try to work out some incentives on this older building, which may fit your needs but doesn't ours? And they said, as attractive as that sounds, absolutely not. We do not want to get back in this quagmire in the town of Odessa. And so once again, we started researching, we started looking for sites that would be centralized, that would be conducive to the future of Southern paramedic services. And as you know, just in the back of your minds, that we extended an invitation to a watchmaker repair business that hires disabled veterans to serve in an apprenticeship and to work out of that former ambulance station. And once again, we ran into problems with the town of Odessa, and bottom line to that was that we had to go through their planning, which by the way is provided by the town of Middletown, and we have just recently gotten approval that they would allow the veterans and disabled vets to be able to use that facility in the future, and we brought that back before council. So that all being said, we took a look at not only the current, but the future deployment of paramedic services in Southern Newcastle County. And the director, the chief, his staff, myself, Bill Powers, we've all worked together. And We looked at a site out around the school, and we thought that might be advantageous. However, they're looking to build a school bus depot there on the school grounds, so that was eliminated. And so then we took a look at a site that is right at Boyd's Corner Road and 13. It's right next to Odessa Fire Station Number 4, their satellite station that protects the Central Corps and the northern part of southern Newcastle County. And it is the Huber Crossing Shopping Center site that has already been approved, but they had some open space towards the intersection, and as well as a pad site that could and would accommodate us building this paramedic station, the footprint of the paramedic station at that intersection facing on to Route 13. The location couldn't be better. The location has central deployment opportunities for Route 13, both north and southbound, the old 301, 896, both east and westbound, Delaware Route 1, both north and southbound, Delaware Route 9, both north and southbound, as well as the new 301 will actually connect at the toll plaza just north of Boyd's Corner Road at Biddle's Corner. And so that particular link there could assist us in deployment response over to the west side of the county and into the West Town area and areas in the western and southwestern part of the county. And just the fact of going southbound on Delaware Route 1, there's emergency ramp access to us down around Fieldsboro Road, and where we could exit and service the ever-growing area of Fieldsboro Road with Odessa National and a lot of the various projects that we planned along that roadway and in the Central Core. Nothing comes without a price. And, you know, all best intent and everything, we're at a point where special services went about it in the professional and required manner of the county government. They had surveys done of the property. They had appraisals done of the property. And so it come back. This is a commercial business corridor area. It's going to be developed. The owner of the property, Barry Baker, was an exceptional person and company to deal with. We met with him numerous times. You know, the appraisal came back at $718,500. The funding is available within the approved public safety EMS station capital project. And the other thing is we sat down with the Odessa Fire Company, and once again, I applaud the efforts of Director Bryant, Larry Tan, Chief Tan. I was directly involved, Special Service directly involved. And what we've worked out is an agreement with the fire station so that we have interconnectivity to go out on the Delaware Route 1 through their fire station rather than have to come out on 13 and fight the intersection there. We also have DelDOT approval to have both entrance and egress onto Route 13, but the agreements between everyone would be to have gated access into the station, gated access going over to Odessa Fire Station, and also a gated access that would allow both emergency medical services and fire rescue services to enter the shopping center without going out on the highway. So this has been very well planned, very well thought out. The same engineering group that did Huber Crossing happens to be the same engineering group that the county utilizes. So they were very familiar with the pad sites and how everything could be arranged. And I don't want to take any further to actually discuss the station itself. Chief Tan is here, Director Bryan is here. But I can tell you that this station has been extremely vetted, planned, and I think that it will not only serve today's paramedic and emergency medical, and emergency services type needs south of the canal. But this very station, being as central as it is, could serve as a public safety training module there with its parking, with the centralization and everything. So with that, that kind of gives you where we came from, where we are, and we would certainly enjoy the, on behalf of public safety and the council district south of the canal, people south of the canal, southern Newcastle County, we would certainly appreciate this council's support in being able to move forward. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for being so long, but if Director Bryan or Chief Tan may want to follow up with some explanation as to how they feel about this station and how much it means to their service.
Chair, I want to recognize Councilman Woods is here. Councilman Street, do you have anything you want to add at this point? Or you
No, the only thing I want to add is in the growth area, it's needed now. The need is going to become even greater going forward. So in my view, we need to move forward as soon as practical, take care of what we need to take care of today, as well as plan for future growth.
Not looking to beat on this, but Councilman Dell, I don't know if you had discussion on this. I'm not looking to discuss it now. I'll just throw it out there at you.
Okay.
When I had the town of Christiana as part of my district, and the people were complaining, and they were looking, DelDOT was looking at making it a one-way to come out, but there was a concern about emergency services. DelDOT spoke of a gating system that's available that they were going to put in. To go in, there would be an electronic system, and they would actually give the emergency services the remote. So when you talk about this gate going here, gate going there, just kind of something, if it wasn't discussed, to keep in mind. You know, I see the guy jumping off, jumping out of the unit to open the gate to go through and then close it behind.
Yeah. Now, and I'm not sure exactly, and Wayne Merritt, our manager of special services, is here. They may want to touch a little bit further, but you are exactly right from the standpoint that the emergency vehicles themselves would have, you know, egress from those or to be able to enter those gates and everything, but I think that the gates would actually be part of our footprint and part of our plan for the building. So, but you have special services, the director of public safety, as well as Chief Tan here also.
Well, are there any questions from council? Any questions from the public? And perhaps more in depth when we are ready to put it around. All right.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is Ordinance 16-092, amend the grant budget appropriating funding of $100,000 from the Newcastle County FY 2017 Community Services General Fund operating budget to the remediation vacancies making progress revamp. Grant to be administered by the Department of Community Services. This is something that we had discussed a little earlier on the presentation. Councilwoman Dillon.
Actually, the first one will be done by Councilman Hollins, and I will do the second.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you mentioned, we did cover the revamp program at a previous Community Services Committee meeting. This program was announced, I believe, was back in the month of August. And the whole idea is to address vacant properties throughout Newcastle County. I think it's a very creative way to move forward with a problem that's not only just in certain parts of the county, but throughout Newcastle County. When we had the presentation, all of the census tracts were identified, and I think we can all agree that they pretty much cover all of Newcastle County. So this is another step, another tool that we have to address an ongoing problem that's happening here in Newcastle County as well as other jurisdictions across the country. So I really want to commend Community Services for coming forward with this particular program to help us with this new challenge.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. 16-093, amend the annual operating budget, reduce the Department of Community Services FY 2017 approved general fund operating budget by $100,000 to provide funding toward the remediation vacancies making progress revamp grant. Councilwoman Dillon.
Yes, this is the companion ordinance to 092. It, you know, helps move the money around.
Okay. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. Ordinance 16-094 to provide for the installation of turn-of-the-century lights, Granville, with Ridge streetlights on standard pole in the Rothwell Village subdivision located at St. George's 100, and for a light tax based on the cost of streetlights. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. you know, we'll say this evening as per title and everything, but this is, of course, street lights that are put in and been petitioned by the, by the community. As we all know, the light tax base will be assessed on the property taxes in the future to recover any installation or maintenance fees with the street lights. And I did take note to one thing. I know what Granville with ribs are, but I saw, like, now we're putting in turn-of-the-century lights. So I don't know what all that means other than I'm getting older.
They go in counterclockwise.
They go in counterclockwise.
Going backwards. Okay, anything from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. 16-095, to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 2, Administration, Article 3, Officers and Employees, waiving the access fee for Homeowners Association Portal. This follows up on what we did previously in the Recorder of Deeds office, where we waived the fee for maintenance corporations and civics to put their deed restrictions and such on file for free. This will allow those associations to access them online once they get everything set up without paying the technology fund fee. Any questions by any members of Councilman Bell?
Just brief comment is that, you know, I think you got to give credit where credit's due, and you've championed this all along. I think it's good legislation, it's good common sense, and it's a good practice for us to work very closely with our civic associations and our maintenance corporations. And as many have said on this council before, another tool in the toolbox. But I think you taking the initiative to see this thing through deserves to be mentioned.
Well, thank you, and I tell everyone, get ready for what I got the other night, which is when you get out to your older communities. Do we have any deed restrictions? Do we have bylaws? And No. So we start researching and see what we can find, and then you got to explain to them, yeah, if you want to draft them, you can draft them, but good luck getting people to come to the meeting. But thank you. Any questions on 16-095 from council? Anything from the public? Okay, hearing none. Presentation on the county's investment policy. Please take a seat at the end. Identify. Are you going to work from up here? Whatever you want.
Just I'm fine.
Identify yourself and go for it.
I'm Ken Quarter. The accounting and fiscal manager and finance, responsible for investments and banking. At the last council meeting, or finance committee meeting, you asked for understanding of the investment policy and a discussion of it at this meeting. You should have received a copy of the investment policy a week or so ago. I am prepared here to discuss the highlights of it, what it is, what it is not. When I was asked to take over this function in late May, the staff was well along in revising the policy. It gets revised from time to time to reflect economic conditions. I took a look at it and made some changes. What we have before you today is a product of that. Over time, the county has had a number of investment policies for different pots of money. We have the general fund, which we call the pooled investments. There's the bond fund, there's the sewer fund, there's funds from the Garston bequeath, there are funds for grants, there's police seizure funds. All of these have policies associated with them. The policy for the pooled fund was the most comprehensive. What I observed as I looked at all of these pieces was that's exactly what they were, silos. And so what you have before you is an attempt to come top down on all policies. This policy is comprehensive in that it encompasses everything. This is intended to be what our policy will be unless we are told to do something differently. All funds coming into the county, regardless of the source, will follow this investment policy unless we have a specific statutory or guidance from the county executive that something needs to be done differently. For example, the Garston funds are invested in accordance with the policy that council set up when it was the first bequeathed to us. So the other thing that we wanted to do, if you go to the second page, is is we wanted to make sure that we knew who was accountable. The prior investment policy for the pooled fund made it clear that there was a committee of finance responsible to overseeing all the financial, all the investments. But the other policies really had no accountability in them. It was understood that finance was going to oversee them, and that is what has actually happened, but it wasn't officially documented that finance had responsibility to oversee them. So this policy creates what we renamed the Cash Management Committee, responsible for overseeing all investments, regardless of whether they're pooled or not pooled, with the sole exception of the pension trust and the OPEB investments, which are both trustee plans and have separate investment management teams. Finance does do all of the reconciliations of the accounts, but we do not manage the investments of those two funds. Everything else is managed by finance. So this policy was established to provide accountability, comprehensive oversight, a comprehensive set of investment policies to be followed in all cases except where we're not permitted to or we have some modifications. Bond fund is a good one where, and we'll get to that in a minute, where we use our basic policy to invest the bond funds, but there are restrictions imposed by the IRS. Going to the next slide. We have two fundamental investment horizons. The short term, which is funds that we need during the current fiscal year. The funds we're going to need to do operations. Everything comes in the form of taxes. September was an incredibly busy month as we brought in hundreds and hundreds of millions. This week, as we pay out the school districts, we'll have hundreds of millions going out. Cash flow has been enormous. But then the rest of the year, with the exception of the sewer bills, most of our revenue is behind us and our expenses are all before us. So the funds in this category are the funds that we're going to need to meet the current budget year. It's all invested in government funds, cash equivalents, where the security is paramount. We want to get the best return we can, but for this money, we can't take any kind of risk on the principal. There is part of the funds invested to offset some of the bank fees. We don't try to offset all of the bank fees all the time. We do an analysis to determine what we can earn in the government funds and what we lose by keeping money in the bank accounts to offset fees. And we come up with an optimum amount that we'll put in the bank. It'll offset part of the bank fees but allow us to get the maximum investment. And that break point is where we have the maximum value for the county. We don't currently use an external manager for this part. We could. External managers charge about 10 basis points on average for managing the funds for us. Interest rates are so narrow, so small. There is no, if you go out to and look at the currently available market, you might get 5 basis points to get a foreign government's bond, which we're not going to do. But why are we going to pay somebody 10 basis points to get what we can get just by investing it directly? So it's just, when interest rates increase and there's a bigger spread available in the marketplace, then it would be worth going out and considering an investment manager for the short-term investments. The second, going to slide 5, the longer-term investments. These are funds that we're going to need at some point, longer-term or for a strictly reserve to protect the county. We will have an increasing horizon depending on what the cash flow needs are. Clearly, principal protection is important, but we will have an increasing emphasis on return for the funds that are the furthest down the road. We take a fresh look at cash forecasts on a regular basis and make sure we have matching. And as we unfold all of our investment managers, UBS was here the last time, as soon as that is all up and running, then that will follow all of our cash flows. Right now, that's mostly invested in very short term products. We go to the next slide. We've talked about most of this, but just to point out that the policy, you probably read in the policy that we will have an average duration maximum of up to 10 years. I didn't necessarily like 10 years because that's way too long. But that seemed to be the norm in municipal and government financial forecasts, and the outside advisors, UBS, advised that we should have something that long in case it's ever needed. But the reality is, we're going to look first at our cash flow needs. Cash flow needs don't say 10 years. They say something much shorter. Then we'll look at what available interest rates are in marketplaces. Right now, our expected, our target for duration is under 1.5 years, if you take everything and combine it together. So we're not anywhere close to 10 years. I don't ever expect us to, but I've seen economic environments in the past where that would have been appropriate if we had enough long-term cash flow to warrant it. But the expectation is that we're going to be remaining relatively short. I'd be surprised if we ever got above about 4 years maximum, depending on what happens with the economy. Finally, in the last slide, I mentioned before what we do with the bonds. This is the 2015 bonds. At the time we issued the 2015 bond, we refinanced all of our past bonds. We don't have any other bond funds that we invest for prior bonds. That was all moved. $129 million sits in Wilmington Trust. They invested as a, it's not assets that belong to the county, it belongs to in trust for the payment of bonds. So we don't invest that, and we don't include that in our totals. We do look at the accounts every single day to make sure that the money's there so that nothing happens. I have a dashboard on my computer with direct feeds from the banks. Every bank, every account we have graphically for the last 30 banking days, so I can see where everything stands. And that's up front and center. That $129 million is there. We don't do anything with it other than observe that it hasn't changed when we don't expect it to change. But for the bond funds that we have, for the 2015 bonds, IRS says that you're not allowed to earn more than two thresholds. There are two thresholds in the law. And ironically, those thresholds are so close together that if you cross over one, you're probably going to cross over the other. So for all practical purposes, you just don't want to cross either one of them. The first one says if you cross it, you have to give some money back to the IRS. But if you cross the second one, your bond purchasers no longer are able to take the deduction for the investment earnings, and you lose the tax qualification of the bond. So it's just a non-starter. We're not going to go there. So the bonds are kept invested as if they're short-term, even though we know that it's a longer-term. We could get longer money on it if we had, because the cash flow for the bond is longer-term. But to avoid arbitrage rules for the IRS, their threshold is 1/8 of 1 percentage point over the underlying value of the bond when it's issued. So if we compute that it's a 4% bond, if we earn 4 1/8%, we are now disqualified the whole bond issue. So for that reason, we keep everything invested in short-term funds, no risk of going over the thresholds, and then we manage it under the tax code. We're required to do a formal test of arbitrage each year. And that's the very short nutshell of what we do. Entertain any questions?
I have two things. Yeah, just clarify for me, make sure I'm saying. Basically, what you're saying on the bond funds versus the government saying, we don't want you taking the bond money and getting a windfall interest payment off of the money that you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. What they're saying is that if you look at it from the federal government's perspective, there's no such thing as a tax deduction. It's a federal expenditure. When you deduct your home mortgage on your taxes, they haven't given you a deduction. They have collected your gross taxes as if you didn't have that, and then the reduction in your taxes because of your deductions, they treat that as a federal expenditure. So GO bonds are federal expenditures because the federal government is giving away the income it would have received if it was taxable. So once you get above that, they're saying you have created an arbitrage and defrauded the federal government out of tax dollars, in effect. And therefore, we're not going to let your bondholders get a tax deduction because you have earned too much on this money.
Now, what I have is not directed at anyone in the room particularly. It's a statement that I want to make. I appreciate what you've done here. This council has gone through a lot, as far as I'm concerned, in the last 2 years to get where we are today with clarity on the investment policies and having a copy of them. and I urge everyone to hold on to these. My statement for the record, because we will be going through a transition, and I want this on the record for the future persons that will be responsible for this. You commented that this is the investment policy we have, except for other that is by law, or where a directive may come from the county executive. I just want it clear, and if I'm speaking out of line, please, fellow council members, speak up. I think I speak for this council when we say, going forward, we now have clarity. If anyone in this government intends at any time to change a policy for investment purposes or invest in other guidelines, at the very least before that takes place, this council should be made aware of it and have an opportunity. Not saying we have the yay or nay, whoever wants to fight that out, fight it out, but we should have an opportunity for discussion so we're aware where the investments are going and no one that comes after us has to spend the time and effort that we've spent and others to get us where we are today. So I think we're all in agreement on.
Could I make one comment that's related to our auditor? And that is, one of the other things I did when we went through this was to take the last audit of the investments and I try to address everything that could be addressed from that report in that prolonged in policy and added it to the policy.
And I'm sure it's appreciated. Mr. Wasbot.
Yeah, thanks, Ken, for an excellent presentation. I'm really encouraged by our finance, Office of Finance, and our future direction in investments. Particularly, UBS came a few weeks ago and gave a presentation, and I'm encouraged by they're going to be engaging three investment managers, and those investment managers will be managing the reserve money as it should be for longer term. You know, the reserves is not money you need easily accessible access to, so it should be invested in medium to long term durations. Well, what I want to say is I just needed to get something off my chest. And thank you for your statements, Councilman Smiley. In the presentation a few weeks ago by UBS, those of you who were here, you probably saw that, as Ken indicated in this presentation, Linton Trust manages a portion of the of the reserves, and UBS has a portion of the reserves. They're not really managing it now because they were engaged as investment consultant, and $92 million was, when the two previous investment managers were terminated, $92 million was given to UBS, and they were instructed to invest it in very short-term investments. And as you can see from that presentation a few weeks ago, we've earned a lot less in investment return than what was earned at Wilmington Trust. And I actually went, that presentation confirmed what I already knew and what was in the audit report. And I went home that night, I was sick to my stomach. I'm just disheartened because the county lost a lot of money in investment income over the past 3.5 years due to the directive of a single individual. It's no criticism of finance because they did what they were told to do. No criticism of UBS, they did what they were told to do. But I just wanted to get that off my chest.
And we just need to get the contract signed so we can get the money where we can increase the profits. Okay. Anything further from any members of council? Anything from the public? Okay, next on the agenda, replacement printers for council's offices. If you recall, we had discussion and we had tasked Ms. Shin and Mr. Boyle with looking into bringing our printers more in line to cut down on the printer cartridge costs, because we're buying all different types of cartridges. And is he here?
Mr. Boyle, policy director. And Mr. Yearling, John Yearling, and Fred Master are here, also here.
Okay.
Just basically, again, Ms. Shin was assigned as the lead. And the idea was to have consistent printers throughout. I've kind of taken over the project since her departure. On our side, we're looking at probably at this point 24 printers out of 31. The rest of them, they are either, we're going to keep the laser jets, and 1.1 councilman does not want a printer. Okay, and that's fine. Okay. At this point, it'd be 24 printers. And correct me if I'm wrong from our discussion, I'm looking at the money end, and IT is going to pick up the cost of buying these printers. Okay.
I get it.
But they're not going to pick
Jim and I sat down. John, you're the boss. I'm sorry. Jim and I sat down. We'll take care of all that. It's just that the cost of the printer cartridges are obviously
that's
a mental budget that you will have to replace those cartridges.
The cartridges are ours, the printers, they'll be able to pick up that cost.
And just so everybody has a comfort level, no decision has been made on this. It's just the research. They've narrowed it down, and I just felt it was time to get it in here to us so we could hear about it. If we're ready to make a decision today, fine, if not, you know, whatever, but I do think this will reduce council's costs.
Again, Mr. Massey and Mr. Newman here, and they brought a sample of one that Newman suggested.
This is the HP 4520. Comes with a good recommendation. It's also a copier and a scanner, so not only does print functions, it also does copies. So if you need to make a quick copy, you can do that right there. It comes with software. You can either do it from your desktop, or you can just do it right here with this window here. Paper feeds in right here. When it prints, it comes through here. Pretty low desktop print for the money. We thought it was a pretty good buy. So if you want to scan something here, you just raise this up. Whoops, sorry.
Yeah, that's not raised too much. But that's what I wanted to say. Wait, listen. Two cartridges. Okay. The one I have now has
four or five
cartridges. Yeah. Councilman Warner.
Thanks. The HP 4520, it doesn't do multiple copies if you had something that three or four pieces, you have to feed each one separately?
It does do multiple copies.
Where's the feeder?
So, whoops, I'm sorry, I stand corrected. I'm sorry.
My office doesn't do multiple copies.
I'm sorry, I stand corrected on that. Thank you, I stand corrected on that.
So basically, our office still has copiers that can do multiple copies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're not touching the big machines at all.
Okay. And does this do color, the HP 4520?
Yes.
And in terms of, it's a laser jet?
No, it's an inkjet.
It's an inkjet. And what's the quality? I forget the measuring tool.
From what my research, it comes out as a pretty high rating in terms for, it's about a $70 printer. Mm-hmm. And so in that range, it comes out with a pretty good high rating on it.
And the two cartridges, one's the color cartridges and one's the black?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But you cannot pass $20 bills. I already tried. And I know there are some out there that will, but this won't be.
Yes. And what are the replacement costs for the cartridges?
I didn't have the price on that. We can get that to you. That's no problem. We can get that to you.
And part of what we were looking at, or I was looking at when I first discussed this with Holly, was the fact, for one thing, we'll be buying the cartridges in a bigger bulk.
Yes.
And now we have three printers like this, four printers like that, mm-hmm. and they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, one of the things when you look at Consumer Guide, they suggest you look at the cartridge replacement cost.
Yeah.
Of course, it would be en masse. Thank you.
And you have these over in the administration as well?
Yes.
Yes.
I
know where we can get cartridges.
Economy is a large scale.
I'm sorry.
No. I just wanted to say I'm sorry. We don't. I know this is on record too, because I don't want to start setting the expectations that I spoke to Jim about this, and I just don't want to get around that everybody can have a desktop printer on there, because it's going to cost a little, blow our budget way out of the order.
You mean everybody over in?
Everybody everywhere.
No.
That kind of, when the word gets out, then, I want one, and I want one. We put them in areas where there's little to no access to network printers.
Let me put it to you this way. The way council works, when my printer, I finally couldn't nurse it along anymore, and I told Tara, you go ahead and rub your eyes. Yeah, my printer was dead. I came in the next morning and found her old one complete with dust. Said, here, you got a new one. I said, no, it's new to you. So that we understand how it works.
I'm with you. I just don't, you know.
Well, we can keep a secret.
Well, not now.
Really?
This is going out.
So, three, four, seven. So I guess my question is, are we comfortable moving forward with the printer replacements?
I see a lot of nodding heads.
Can I get a show of hands? All right. Where's my wires? And I'm glad you found that, because you knew where I was going with the emails. I was going to.
I saw your emails.
Yeah, I was going to go get one and just keep the receipt, and then after the day take it back so I could show it.
I was talking to Jim. Jim and I talked on the phone, and we had a nice discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate the effort you went through to get us one in here to look at. Okay. Next, we're on to the. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thanks for that.
This does happen in relatively soon for the replacement.
Do you have a time frame other than by Friday? What kind of time frame are we talking?
When can you pay?
We just went through it. We won't put it this way. Nothing's going to come out until this comes in. Unlike my checking account.
Soon as he gets his
answer,
it changes.
Okay. Onward and upward. We're now on council grants and events. We have the Timber Civic Association. Councilman Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Timber Civic Association serves the Timbers community on Naaman's Road. They are going to have a block party and networking event, and they have a request for $300 to help fund that for people with a lot of new people coming in the community, kind of like meet and greet and get to know everybody. So I'd like to make a motion for $300 for the Timber Civic Association to fund their community block party.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? I'm not voting. Okay, next we have the Delaware Chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, otherwise known as NOBLE. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This organization comes to us each year and is made up certainly of distinguished officers and leaders of our county police department. You'll notice the contact person, Vaughn Mossbon, our new Lieutenant Colonel. Director Bryant is actively involved, as well as other officers. And each year they've asked for $2,500 to put together Thanksgiving and Christmas type packages for needy families throughout Newcastle County. I want to just read this because I think it's very important to recognize last year, $2,500, we were able to complete food baskets for 65 families throughout Newcastle County. Our chapter also utilized some of the funding to assist with our Christmas Adopt-A-Family, where we purchased food items and prepared food baskets for over 50 families and bought gifts to include clothing, educational toys, gaming systems, and gift cards for over 135 children. What's unique about NOBLE and what's unique about the way they go about this is they encourage all of us, to, if we know of any needy family in our districts, to contact Joe Bryant or contact Vaughn Bond, let them know. So this is truly an initiative that serves all of Newcastle County, every one of our districts, and they take great pride in it, but it's been very successful. And I know last year I did give probably 4 to 6 families names to our NOBLE folks, and you know, they were very appreciative of receiving it at the time of need. So with that, if there's anyone that would like to join in any small amount, we'd appreciate it. If not, I am prepared to do the full $2,500.
Okay. Let's, Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
I'll do 500.
Did I see Councilman Cartier?
Yeah, 500 for me as well.
Councilwoman Diller?
200.
Mr. Woods, 500? $200 for Councilman Hollins. Councilman Bell, that leaves you with $600.
That's fine.
I thought you were going to make money there for a minute.
No, that's no problem.
Excuse me.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'll split that one in.
Okay, so Councilman Bell with 300 and Councilman Street with 300, and that should bring us to the 25.
And behalf, on behalf of Noble, the organization and their leaders, we thank everyone. You never lose on any of these things because I entered the, I guess, the farm and the chef, and I ended up, when it was done, I guess I was paying more than everybody else, but it all worked out for the best.
Can we get a clear motion? Can we get a clear motion for
the Yeah, I move that we, Newcastle County Council, provide $2,500 grant to the Delaware Noble Organization.
Second.
Delaware
chapter. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Not voting.
Before we leave this topic,
yes,
I just want to thank the folks at Noble as well. I got some needy families' names to them at Edgemore Gardens very late in the game, and they took care of it. And I was very pleased and thrilled to hear that.
Thank you. Next, we have the Springwood Maintenance Corporation, Councilman Taggart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a grant that I have brought through again in the past, and this is a corporation that will be working on their community day, and I move for $500.
Second.
There's a motion and a second for $500. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Not voting. Next, we have the Christina Cultural Arts Center, Incorporated, Councilman Street.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Christina Cultural Arts has made the request. The request is for the maximum $2,500. I am prepared to give $1,500, and I'm not happy about that, primarily because basically, in terms of city children, the arts have almost been taken away from them, and this is one of the few places in the city where they actually have access and the ability to participate in the arts, but I'm prepared to get $1,500 this time.
Councilman Warner?
Yeah, I'd like to add $500 and just state that in 1969, then Councilman Joe Biden helped to convert this to the old Asbury Methodist Church to a African American based cultural arts center as described by Councilman Street. I was political science undergraduate and worked with Councilman Biden as an intern that year, and this was my project, and I applaud the work of the Christina Cultural Arts Center, so I'm happy to make a contribution to that.
I believe Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Councilman Hollins are.
I was going to say 500, but that puts us over 2,500. If do you want to split 250
sure.
apiece?
250 apiece, okay.
Okay.
Councilman Street, if I can get a new motion from you for $2,500.
First, thank you all very, very much. And second, the motion is for $2,500.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Just,
excuse me.
Yeah, just a question. How much does Councilman Street end up putting in?
$1,500.
He's doing $1,500? Okay, I'll do $500 of the $1,500.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Okay, just to run down the record, there's Betsy back here. Councilman, council members, Bell 500, Street 1000, Weiner 500, Kilpatrick 250, Hollins 250. Total 2,500. We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Not voting. Okay, next we have Newcastle Prevention Coalition, Councilman Street.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this request is for $2,500, and I'm prepared to give $1,500. And the reason I'm doing so is, you know, I've raised Cain and screamed unfairness about kids being suspended out of school. Well, this is an initiative and a partnership with the Network Prevention Program and the Colonial School District to give kids an alternative to suspension as opposed to being home or out the street. This is an alternative, and this money is to provide mere stipends to the volunteer staff until a grant is available to them to really increase the operation and begin the pay staff. So the motion is for $1,500.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Not voting.
Okay, under community events, we have a proposal for Wilmington J.C.'s Christmas Parade. They annually come forward with this for $1,500 under President Bullock. Council Pro Tem Holland.
Actually, what happened, there was some communication from my office because President Bullock was not going to be around, so I agreed to bring this before council. I'm not so certain what the documentation says, but that was the agreement. There had been some communication with the Wilmington J.C.'s and with Anthony, and eventually with my office. And I don't know how we exactly did it. Last year, I think we took it out of the
community events line.
Yeah. So that being the case, I would make a motion that we continue the same thing we started last year to provide to the J.C.'s for the Christmas parade. And any council members from 1 to 10, obviously, can be a part of that.
Councilman Ward, your relative, we knew here, they just like Ellsworth, well, different from Ellsworth, they have a float for county council every year. So, okay, so
one of us throws candy canes at the kids. I'm not gonna mention any names, but initials smart.
And one of us throw kids at the candy canes. Okay, we have a motion for $1,500 from community fence to the Wilmington J.C.'s for the annual, let's be politically correct, holiday parade.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion, second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it's passed. I ask everyone to hold steady for a minute. That completes our grants, applications, but not the issues before us. I will be as quick as I can. We've discussed time and again the issues that are dealt with in the back rooms for grant requests. The lack of information that comes forward, the incorrect applications. Even today, we have an application which the clerk has worked through, and I review these every time. And I know there are some people that question why I get involved when I don't do the grants. Well, like yourselves, as a member of council, I have a responsibility to look at the finances. So I've discussed with Betsy, and one of the things we have, and I just want to make clear so everyone understands, we get applications that do not have all the documentation, don't have everything witnessed. One of the things that I know Betsy and I have discussed numerous times and we're very adamant about is no one on this floor should put the documents in that are missing. You can look at my office and you'll see volumes of the grants that we've gotten. But in no way, if they're missing a 501c3 paperwork, would I or anyone else put that in? Because by doing so, if it's not submitted by the applicant and it turns out they've lost that status and that gets found out, it's not them that submitted the false application. It's us by completing your application. So we don't do any of that. It has to go back to them or they have to send the information. But as always today, we've done an application that's 2005, which means they put it in their system, they put it in their file, so we don't know if we're getting new and current information or not. The current application we have is listed revised May 13th, 2016. We still get dealing with it. So my suggestion, and it is a suggestion, but I am going to call for a vote because I think it's important for council to make sure Betsy and all the aides know that this is what we want. And that would be part of the language, number 9 says, is your organization a 501c3 nonprofit entity? Yes or no? We all know. If it's no, they're fine. If it's yes, then please attach a copy of the 501c3 certification. What I want to put there is additional language that says the 501c3 certification and or confirmation letter received within the last 3 calendar years. I think we need to make sure that it's current. And it doesn't mean that apply, they request the letter, we get that all the time. But I actually looked at a grant application that said a letter was submitted and it from the federal government and it stated that your organization had received 501c3 qualifications in 1945. It remains current. That sounded good until I looked at the top of the letter, and that letter was dated 1997. So I think we need more current information. So I'd like to include that in there. We would revise the date on the application to November 1, 2016, which means Betsy would put it out that date or by. And as of, here's the part that's going to be a nail biter for some people. As of January 1, 2017, any application received that is not on the new form and does not contain all the relevant information, because the 2015 one requires federal information. There's a form in there that's not in the old ones. So as of January 1, 2017, so that gives a couple of months for people to find out, if the current application comes, if the application that comes in that is not current and is not full, then the aide needs to contact them and send that back and tell them you have to send a new the proper application or it's not going to get before the board. That's my suggestion. I mean, it's open for, we've got 25 minutes if we want to discuss it. If people think I'm going up the wrong road, I just want to make sure that we're doing what should do and that the people out there are, because when I get the same thing, and some of them even look like it's just a photocopy and they just wrote out the date and changed the date. We should be making sure we're getting the proper information. That's my point. Councilman Weiner and Councilman Hollins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I support each of the points which you've raised, and I would urge council, as you've suggested, that we signify by raising our hands to show by our count that we support that approach.
Councilman Hollins and Councilman Street.
I think that it's important that we use the current application form. We've had that in my office, and people are able to take the application from last year, the year before, and just fill it out all over again. And it's not the current application, but we changed applications for a reason. But the date on the letter for the 501c3, if they got, say, the letter 5 years ago, you're saying that they need to go back to the government to get another letter? That that has to be dated within the last 3 years?
I put 3 years. Anyone that has more involvement than I do knows of a time frame that would be more relevant.
I think one of the things is that a lot of folk, when you have in there the 501c3, they assume it's a requirement, but it's really not a requirement. And somewhere the language should be that if you are 501c3, then you need proof. But
that is what it says.
It does say that.
That's what it says. And all I'm trying to say is, if you're going to provide the proof, if you're going to provide a suit, we want to make sure, for council's good as well as their own, that somebody in Washington hasn't terminated your 501c3 and you're not aware of it. That's all I'm saying. Councilman Street.
I understand your intention, but my 501c3 letter from Hilltop, I used a letter that we got in 1981 until 2011. As a matter of fact, the one I sent is dated 2011 is the one I'm still using with all my applications now. Now, if you tell me I need another one, then I'm going to have to go back to the IRS asking for an update, which I'm probably going to do now anyway. But I have no idea how long it will take the IRS to send me a new letter. But I can assure you that we maintain our 501c3 status since 1981. So, and you're absolutely correct. The letters copied. I still have the original 2 letters in the safe. So when we run out of copies, I go back to the original. And what I do now is I send both letters. And so I'm saying all I have to say, it's not new yet.
No, I know, and that's why I bring it up for discussion, because I'm sure like yourself, I mean, I'm not involved with the 501c3. It's just, seems just very outdated. So I don't know if there's a more relevant time, or, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, I'm thinking about something, so we may be talking.
Well, I just, as a nonprofit, do you not file something on an annual basis, like your $20 annual tax fee or whatever it is?
We file 990.
Okay, so if you do that, wouldn't that be proof that you are still under that classification?
Yes.
So rather than a new letter?
You're right about that.
Wouldn't that be?
I'm listening.
She's correct about that. If they have filed their 990 for the previous year, that's really what the IRS wants to be filed to let them know that the organization is still active. So I would think
so they should have that within a year of each.
Yes, a recent 990 would be acceptable as opposed to the letter. Okay. Because Councilman Street is right. I mean, you know, I'm really not sure as I think about what generates a new IRS letter unless maybe you ask them. So I think the 990 might be better than...
Well, okay, for those of you that are much more familiar with a 990 than I am, is there one specific page? Is there information that would be considered confidential?
No, you just file and you pay your $20 on an annual basis, don't you?
And the 990 should be found online. I think it's like DiveStar or something like that. Yeah.
All of those little nonprofits do it.
Supposedly.
Well, but that's...
My 990 is about a quarter inch thick, which a lot of them are, some larger than that, but...
Is that two-sided?
Yes. but for the purposes of this, the signed cover sheet should give us what we want.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
So, and copy of the signature sheet of the most recent filed 990.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like it'll work?
Let me go back and look at my 990 to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, Councilman Tack.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, and I think I'm on the same line as Councilman Street and Hollins, that we absolutely don't want to make this any more complicated than we can. So I guess my question is, if they say no, and which many do, and we proceed and everything's fine, we issue the check. But if they say yes and they give us a letter, what ramifications would be there for us, you know, as opposed to trying to make it a little bit more difficult or another hoop for them to
Well, if you fill out a document that declares that something is true and correct,
mm-hmm.
and then it turns out that it's not, then it is an issue. Then it is an issue. If you say, yes, you're a 501c3, and then we find out down the road that you've lost that certification, but you've marked yes. And all we're saying is, I'm just looking for something more current. If the 990 does that, I'm fine.
Still, my question is...
If they put no, fine.
Yeah.
It's just, look, it's no different than the non-discrimination policy. But if they put no, they just have to say why.
But how would we, if we, I don't know how we'd find out they lost it anyhow, but if we did, how would that... in turn affect us in the
I would say they're being dishonest filling out the application and they shouldn't receive it. If they put yes and they're not one, if they've lost it, I mean, Councilman Retta was the only one I know that had a situation where he tracked them down and got the money back because he found out that they didn't have the correct they falsified the information and he went after them. Councilman Hollins and Councilman Kilpatrick.
I guess, you know, we talked about the 501c3 quite a bit, and I remember I thought the requirement of the 501c3 was quite a bit for a lot of the agencies that we support with these small grants. So I still wonder why do we even have it there, and I would imagine, I don't know how many, probably half of them are not 501c3 anyway. And they still get the grants. What difference does it make to us if they are or not 501c3? It seems to complicate the process for no apparent reason.
Right. Is there a legal reason we were told we should keep that?
The auditor
recommended, but the auditor has left the room. So,
recommended that they all questions.
Oh, well, he recommended that they all be 5 or 6.
But we voted that down.
So
we voted it down. Recommended they all be, and I said.
So why don't we just remove number 9, asking if you're a 501c3, and be done with the issue?
Yeah.
Since the auditor's not in the room to tell us no. Councilman Street.
Well, that makes more sense, and if you're actually familiar, but you know. The 501c3 status sends a message that we have a certain level of expectation, and that reduces the likelihood of con artists running around and thinking they can come here and do what they want to do, so, like somebody running around the racetrack. Would you like to make a small contribution to the little brother?
Okay. Why don't we do this?
I still get that.
Why don't we do this? We will leave number 9. And I will bite the bullet and quit questioning the dates on the paperwork. Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, my point of fact, civic associations don't qualify as general nonprofits under the IRS code. They're given a different 501 designation.
Right.
So, just to throw it in.
But you can ask and what not ask for documentation. Just are you or aren't you?
I'm trying to figure out why we're doing it.
Yeah, I think Jay just gave it. It puts a little bit of oomph out there.
I think it makes people think, but I think it also makes people do what they're doing now. They send information that's not correct and so forth, but it's not going to make a difference on our decision making. You know, if you're 501c3, okay, fine. If you're not, fine. At the end of the day, it doesn't sway someone getting or not getting the grant.
Well,
other than if you are a 501c3, it makes it more challenging for you than if you're not.
Well, and if they don't submit the paperwork, technically it doesn't come forward.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's
right. The so all right. The extra hurdle to go through is a 501c3. The easiest thing to do is say, no, I'm not.
Okay.
Just give me the money.
Here's what I'm asking. Does council agree that we will remove number 9, which is the 501c3 reference? We will release a revised grant application as of November 1, 2016, and as of January 1, 2017, in order for a grant to come forward, it has to be on that application and be complete. Mm-hmm. So that will make it much easier on everyone, because now we don't have to, you don't have to worry about letting them know to do the 501c3 in advance. Fair enough?
Yeah,
can I get a show of hands? He still wants to go check his 990.
Can I just let the record reflect and say that all hands were raised?
All hands were raised except for the individual council member who doesn't want it to be known he has arthritis.
Mr. Chair.
It was approved. Yes, sir.
I just want to bring up another subject which is related to this. There's about 5% of the grants that we don't get reports back as to what they've done with the money, that it's consistent with what they proposed. And council aides and members have been very diligent in following up, but there still seems to be this hardcore 5%. And I just wonder if there's anything that we could or should do as a body concerning those organizations.
Well, I don't think it would be appreciated if I did it, although I think as a member of this council I have a right to do it. But maybe one of the council members who has that situation and has tried to get the information and they have failed to provide the letter would like to have the county auditor contact them about going in and doing an audit, which under the application process they sign an agreement that they would be subject to that. Councilwoman Dillon.
If somebody missed a report, I mean, I've got one that's a couple of days overdue that Sue's following up, but if somebody missed a report and just never sent me one, they'd never get any money again.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I just wouldn't give them money.
Well, I'd like to send the auditor just once. Just to kind of send the message.
Lisa, you got to
I would never give them money.
Councilman Woods, here's a safe zone. Ask Chrissy if there are any grants that were received under Councilman Redd and they haven't sent the letter yet. because then we'll send them out on behalf, send the order out on behalf of Johnson and Reynolds.
Oh, my God.
What? You got to lose.
It's on behalf of me. I don't care. If they, if we gave them money, then we deserve to get the letter. That's part of the agreement. Yeah.
There are organizations that haven't sent back the report for, let's say, a year, or two, or three, or four. Mm-hmm. And it, I think it's incumbent upon us to have our auditor at this point.
We could have him contact him and say, look, I've been advised by counsel to contact you if I can make an audit because this is still outstanding.
Yes.
Yes.
And not up to a year.
And we're going to ask Councilwoman Kilpatrick to pick one of hers to be the test case.
Works for me.
Is that okay? Is that one you gave money to? Works for me?
Works for me.
Okay.
Is that already on the form maybe that you could?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I haven't seen the form.
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, I could discreetly let you know of a couple of groups that don't apply anymore because of that language. Okay. Thank you, Irma. Anything for the expense of revenue roundtable? Anything under other? I.
Did you have something?
No. You first, because maybe you have it instead of me.
No,
you have it. Okay. Ordinance 16-106 was inadvertently left off of this agenda. Therefore, we cannot discuss it. But it is on council's agenda. And we are within our rights, so it will be read into the record. It will be presented tonight, and discussion can take place on the floor of council. That's 16-106. And that is as per council to council's advice. Okay? Can I get a motion? Any public comment? Councilman Wire. Cartier, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I just want to, again, reach out to finance. I know that we had the report about Wells Fargo being a major manager of our funds, various funds in the county, the Wells Fargo Bank. I just want to draw attention to this again. They opened 2 million fraudulent bank accounts. 5,000 employees have been fired. The CEO of Wells Fargo Bank, Stump, has resigned. There are multiple investigations going on. They now are online for $187 million in fines. I mean, it's not a reputable bank. I really don't think the public of Newcastle County should have its funds in Wells Fargo. And I'm pretty adamant about it. And I think we need to find another financial institution, hopefully with better roots and better in the local area than that institution. Thank you. I think someone will want to comment.
Yes.
Just for the record.
Your name for the record.
Ken Porter, Finance. For the record, we had an RFP for our primary banking relationship. And TD Bank has won the bid. We will be severing our relationship with Wells.
Thank you.
Councilman Street and Councilman Warren.
But if that's going to be our position, that's fine. But how you take that position and all the things that the former representatives of Wilmington Trust were accused of and keep Garston or whatever else we have in the portfolio there? I mean, if you're going to fire banks for mischief, fire all of them. You just can't let one stand out like a sore thumb. It's not like this is the first time it happened.
That's where the money goes. Well, that's why they go to jail, right?
For the record, I'm not refinancing my mortgage.
Response in
that. Unless council's going to pay the fees.
This is Ken Porter again. We didn't fire Wells Fargo for all those things. They didn't win the bid.
And this was a normal course of business?
Normal course of business bid. They did not win the bid in a normal bidding process within the county. The second with Wilmington Trust, when Wilmington Trust had its problems and M&T Bank acquired Wilmington Trust, the one thing they did not change was the name Wilmington Trust for the investment operation,
right?
Because it had such a stellar reputation. It is separate and distinct from the
loan
banking situation that Wilmington Trust went through.
Anything further? Councilman Cartier. Warner.
You're doing great.
My apologies.
We do look a lot alike.
Yeah.
Well, his hair is getting there.
Yes. may I ask that we have the PowerPoint electronically sent to us that Ken Porter presented today. I'd rather store it digitally rather than paper-wise. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Public comment? If nothing else, can I get a motion?
So moved.
Motion to adjourn or second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Excuse me, Councilman Street, the motion's failed.
Somebody's got to lose their stuff. Thank you all very much.